Radio Bronca.
Radio Bronca.
Aquí levantan la voz, Radio Bronca.
Levantan la voz.
Dice las cosas como son. Radio Bronca.
Radio Bronca.
Aquí levantan la voz, Radio Bronca.
104.5.
Dice las cosas como son.
Busca rigor, compromiso y acción.
Dice las cosas como son.
Bronca.
Fuck the bastards, fuck the bastards, boy, fuck me, are you? 104.5, 104.5, 104.5 FM.
Yeehaw!
Radio Bronca.
Venimos para enterrar nuestra fe, nuestros preciosos pasados, nuestras banderas rotas, él humillando, cojeando, tortuoso, la carga de sueños. Póngales en el suelo, entiérrelos, ni palabras, ni sonidos, solo las hojas en el viento, temblando, y el dolor de esta semilla, una raíz poderosa, y creció. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Fuck the Bastards.
Yeah.
Muy buenas a todas y a todos. Sintonizáis Radio Bronca, Radio Libre, emitiendo en el 104.5 de la FM, y aquí empieza Fuck the Bastards. Todos los lunes en directo a partir de las 6 y en horario repetido a partir de las 12:30 de la mañana para todos los oyentes y oyentas que nos puedan escuchar a través del 96.6 de la FM. Y bien, comentaros que este programa, no sé, es un pequeño reflejo de las cosas interesantes que se mueven dentro de los canales no comerciales, y que si queréis enviarnos cualquier aportación, pues lo podéis hacer escribiéndonos al apartado de correos 25.102.08.080 de Barcelona. También sabéis que tenéis a vuestra disposición la web de la radio, www.radiobronca.info, donde encontraréis información detallada de todos los programas que forman la familia de Radio Bronca. Y bien, hoy vamos a tener un programa un poco diferente a lo que acostumbramos a tener por aquí. Bueno, tampoco tanto, pero bueno, hemos pensado que sería interesante dedicar el programa de hoy a la lírica, a la expresión de las emociones a través de las palabras. Y bueno, tenemos por aquí a gente que tiene ganas de decir la suya, tiene ganas de comentar o compartir sus pensamientos y sus emociones. Y bien, antes de entrar en este tema, me gustaría pinchar una banda que me gusta mucho y que precisamente hoy van a tocar aquí en la ciudad de Barcelona, aunque tocarán en una sala comercial, pero bueno, seguro que si vais un poco antes y habláis con los chicos, no creo que haya problema para que os metan de invitados o de invitadas. Y bueno, venga, vamos a escuchar a esta banda que se llama Dark Castle. Son una pareja, bajo y batería, y suenan así de potentes. Thank you.
Do me a favor. When you're free, after the press conferences, after the rallies in your honor, after the drums have calmed down and the singers have grown tired, after every supporter has given you a hug, take the time to find a grassy field with a tree. Bring no one but yourself. Sit until the rivers pour from your soul. Feel the warmth of the sun nature in your skin. This is the touch of your mama's hand caressing your forehead while you lie sick in bed with a fever. The fever of the system robbing you of open fields and sunsets. Do me a favor. After the interviews, the college speeches, the church visits, boys and girls clubs, NAACP banquets, take a drive in the country. Bring a close friend, one that can talk about smiling skies and crying trees. Take that ride through the country, whichever countryside you prefer. Stop and drink lemonade under the shade of a willow tree. Bring a book. Maybe their eyes were watching God or Watership Down. And when you pass by an old farmhouse that says free puppies, stop and take one home. Name it whatever you want. It doesn't have to be Tupac or Sojourner or Albizu. You can call it Foxy, Skip, or Spot, or whatever comes to mind. Bring that small vessel of life with you and allow him or her to be a channel for the love you've had dammed behind prison walls. Do me a favor. After you've taken a walk with every move baby in the tribe, after you've sat down with Geronimo and Alicia, after you've written your letters to Leonard and Matulu, I want you to remember when you were in love. I'm sure you've known many loves, but the one that you've seen in your dreams when you found yourself completely awake and certain you were at some waterfall with that smiling face. If it is all possible, you should contact this star by phone or by letter or face to face and thank her for the inspiration. Thank her for sharing whatever time you shared and extend your hand in friendship and receive the greatest gift of love. Do me a favor. Learn an instrument. Practice meditation. Take a yoga class. Sit down with friends and have a vegetarian potluck. Ride a bicycle a significant distance. Sit in comfortable silence with someone you love. Seek counsel in your elders, especially the grandmas. Listen to Dead Prez. Write for fun. Tell funny stories. Do me a favor. Don't think of this as chicken soup for revolutionaries. Think of these words as reflections of a 27-year-old who's had the privilege to live all of these moments while the system tried to dehumanize you, enslave your spirit. Yet you, with your gentle presence, have shined through the censorship of prison walls. You've redefined the flow of information and melted the walls of the gulags to touch the holder of this pen, and I fight my urges to walk down the streets in camo and black berets only to ask you questions about Malcolm and George Jackson. I fight my desires to restrict your image to the war of revolution. I'm selfish, because circumstance has afforded me the privilege of seeing the peace of revolution. Although you've shown more peaceful serenity in the midst of true and actual violence than most of us could ever hope to find, to restrict you to moments of ideological debate, extra-long organizing meetings, and endless protests, to deny you sunsets, mountaintops, waterfalls, gardens, and ocean beaches, to offer you the war without the peace is the same as keeping you in a cage. So for me, do me a favor. Do whatever makes you happy and don't hesitate. For all of us, we want to see you truly free. On our way to Philly to free Mumia. They raped our mothers. They took our land. They exploited our labor. Denied us economic equality. Gave us phony education to support their reality. Invaded our neighborhoods with police brutality. Gave us TV, programmed our spirituality. They cut out our tongue, made a move to their rhythm. They poisoned our food, brainwashed our children. They gave us action, the affirmative kind, and grabbed the remote and pressed rewind. They made us see ourselves as they do. Ignorant, subservient, violent, passive, criminal-minded, slave-driven pawns. But now we're aware. But we missed the point. Sure, we organize, boycott, petition, and sing. We write revolutionary poems and demand equality. We ask for books, bread, good health. We ask or demand or share the wealth. But in this fight to reclaim what is missing, we overlooked what is missing. Sure, it's great to have education and health care. But did we have that before? I mean, before. Well, we were that which we are not. When we ran and played and paid homage to the sun. When we prayed for the rain and didn't condition our air. When our children were our children and their godparents weren't Fox and NBC. When the animals were our brothers and sisters instead of slaves in a cage. When our spirits knew existence in tune with our minds. So what's your revolution, my brother? Equal access to mind-numbing desk jobs? Economic stability so you can buy meat in a box and corn in a can? Is it your dream for a black president, female vice, Latino speaker of the house, and gay CEOs? You can dream your dream. I fight for my spirit. I make my penance with the sun. I make love to the wind. The rain will be my shower. And family will be more than a word. While you sell us their definition of success. You see, I remember when I used to walk across these fields every day. I'm a Native American. I use that term for those whose minds are too small to understand that I'm an African. I made my way here through Asia, where I detailed complex philosophies. My name was the Tao before Mao. And I practiced acupuncture long before you had a word for medicine. I made my way through God's country. This is where the skies can thief thunder. I play my drum for her as often as I can. The Kodiak bear still fishes for salmon in this great land. And I made my way here to these plains, and I went into several directions. But it was in Mexico where I left my greatest clue. You see, I knew you'd doubt the true origin of my existence. It took you millennia to build the monoliths that you used to scrape my sky with the same intensity that you used to stab my back all over your map. I built the pyramids the same time I invented rap. And I used them to send signals from Egypt to Mexico. And the result is hip-hop in the urban ghettos from the Boogie down to South Central and beyond. I ran through the Yucatan where I created Zapatismo on my way to Peru where I built Machu Picchu. On my way here to these plains and off to the Atlantic coast where I met myself giving off of a boat and onto an auction block. I've had so many names it's hard to count. I've been Cinque, Tupac Amaru. I've been Malcolm and Sojourner. I came as Elijah twice and twice I came as John. Once as the Baptist and once as John Africa. And both times I foretold the coming of a savior. And this time I've named him Mumia. Now I know you like to call me Mary, but my first name was Mama. But for this second, this unique separate moment in time, this very specific section of history, my name is Crazy Horse, and I've come back to take the land. I'm not afraid of police brutality. I'm not afraid of subatomic realities. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. I won't let them kill Mumia, 'cause I won't stand aside and look. My name is Crazy Horse, and I've come back to take the land that they took.
No gods. Once, flipping through a book on child psychology, I came across a chapter about adolescent rebellion. It suggested that in the first phase of child's youthful rebellion against her parents, she may attempt to distinguish herself from them by accusing them of not living up to their own values. For example, if they taught her that kindness and consideration are important, she will accuse them of not being compassionate enough. In this case, the child has not yet developed herself or her own values. She still accepts the values and ideas that her parents passed on to her, and she is only able to assert her identity inside of that framework. It is only later, when she questions the very beliefs and morals that were presented to her as gospel, that she can become a freestanding individual. Far too many of us so-called radicals and revolutionaries show no signs of going beyond that first stage of rebellion. We criticize the actions of those in the mainstream and the effects of their society upon people and animals. We attack the ignorance and cruelty of their system, but we rarely stop to question the nature of what we all accept as morality. Could it be that this morality, which we think we can judge their actions, is itself something that should be criticized? When we claim that the exploitation of animals is morally wrong, what does that mean? Are we perhaps just accepting their values and turning these values against them, rather than creating moral standards of our own? Maybe right now you're saying to yourself, what do you mean, create moral standards of our own? Something is either morally right or it isn't. Morality isn't something you can make up. It's not a matter of mere opinion. Right there, you're accepting one of the most basic tenets of the society that raised you, that right and wrong are not individual valuations, but fundamental laws of the world. This idea, holdover from a deceased Christianity, is at the center of our civilization. If you're going to question the establishment, you should question it first. Where does the idea of moral law come from? Once upon a time, almost everyone believed in the existence of God. This God ruled over the world. He had absolute power over everything in it, and he had set down his laws that all human beings had to obey. If they did not, they would suffer the most terrible punishments at his hands. Naturally, most people obeyed the laws as well as they could, their fear of eternal suffering being stronger than their desire for anything forbidden. Because everyone lived according to the same laws, they could agree upon what morality was. It was the set of values decreed by God's laws. Thus, good and evil, right and wrong, were decided by the authority of God, which everyone accepted out of fear. One day, people began to wake up and realize that there was no such thing as God after all. There was no hard evidence to demonstrate his existence, and few people could see any point in having faith in the irrational any longer. God pretty much disappeared from the world. Nobody feared him or his punishments anymore. But a strange thing happened. Though these people had the courage to question God's existence, and even deny it to the ones who still believed in it, they didn't dare to question his morality that his laws had mandated. Perhaps it just didn't occur to him. Everyone had been raised to hold the same beliefs about what was moral, and had come to speak about right and wrong in the same way, so maybe they just assumed it was obvious what was good and what was evil, whether God was there to enforce it or not. Or perhaps people had become so used to living under these laws that they were afraid to even consider the possibility that the laws didn't exist any more than God did. This left humanity in an unusual position. Though there was no longer an authority to decree certain things absolutely right or wrong, they still accepted the idea that some things were right or wrong by nature. Though they no longer had faith in a deity, they still had faith in a universal moral code that everyone had to follow. Though they no longer believed in God, they were not yet courageous enough to stop obeying his orders. They had abolished the idea of a divine ruler, but not the divinity of his code of ethics. This unquestioning submission to the laws of a long-departed heavenly master has been a long nightmare from which the human race is only just beginning to awaken. God is dead, and with him, moral law. Without God, there is no longer any objective standard by which to judge good and evil. This realization was very troubling to philosophers a few decades ago, but it hadn't really had much of an effect in other circles. Most people still seem to think that a universal morality can be grounded in something other than God's laws, and what is good for people, and what is good for society, and what people feel called upon to do. But explanations of why these standards necessarily constitute universal moral law are hard to come by. Usually the arguments for the existence of moral law are emotional rather than rational. But don't you think rape is wrong? Moralists ask, as if a shared opinion were a proof of a universal truth. But don't you think people need to believe in something greater than themselves? They appeal, as if needing to believe in something can make it true. Occasionally, they even resort to threats. But what would happen if everyone decided that there is no good or evil? Wouldn't we all kill each other? The real problem with the idea of universal moral law is that it asserts the existence of something that we have no way to know anything about. Believers in good and evil would have us believe that there are moral truths, that is, there are things that are morally true of this world, in the same way that it is true that the sky is blue. They claim, it is true of this world that murder is morally wrong, just as it is true that water freezes at 32 degrees. But we can investigate the freezing temperature of water. We can measure it and agree together that we have arrived at some kind of objective truth, insofar as such a thing is possible. On the other hand, what do we observe if we want to investigate whether it is true that murder is evil? There is no tablet of moral law on a mountaintop for us to consult. There are no commandments carved into the sky above us. All we have to go on are our own instincts and the words of a bunch of priests and other self-appointed moral experts, many of whom don't even agree. As for the words of priests and moralists, if they can't offer any hard evidence from this world, why should we believe their claims? And regarding our instincts, if we feel that something is right or wrong, that may make it right or wrong for us, but that's not proof that it's universally good or evil. Thus, the idea that there are universal moral laws is mere superstition. It is a claim that things exist in this world which we can never actually experience or learn anything about, and we would do well not to waste our time wondering about things we can never know anything about. When two people fundamentally disagree over what is right or wrong, there is no way to resolve the debate. There is nothing in this world to which they can refer to see which one is correct, because there really are no universal moral laws, just personal evaluations. So the only important question is where your values come from. Do you create them for yourself, according to your own desires, or do you accept them from someone else who has disguised their opinions as universal truths? Haven't you always been a little suspicious of the idea of universal moral truths anyway? This world is filled with groups and individuals who want to convert you to their religions, their dogmas, their political agendas, their opinions. Of course they will tell you that one set of values is true for everybody, and of course they will tell you that their values are the correct ones. Once you're convinced that there is only one standard of right and wrong, they're only a step away from convincing you that their standard is the right one. How carefully we should approach those who would tell us the idea of universal moral law, then. Their claim that morality is a matter of universal moral law is at base just a devious way to get us to accept their values, rather than forging values of our own which might conflict with theirs. So, to protect ourselves from the superstitions of the moralists and the trickery of the evangelists, let us be done with the idea of moral law. Let us step forward into a new era in which we will make values of our own rather than accepting moral laws out of fear and obedience. Let this be our new creed. There is no universal moral code that should dictate human behavior. There is no such thing as good or evil. There is no universal standard of right and wrong. Our values and morals come from us and belong to us, whether we like it or not. So we should claim them proudly for ourselves as our own creations, rather than seeking some external justification for them. But if there's no good or evil,
bourgeoisie. The martial law of public opinion. Public opinion is an absolute value to the bourgeoisie, man and woman, because they know they are living in a herd of scared animals that will turn on anyone it does not recognize as its own. They shiver in fear as they ponder what the neighbors will think of their son's new hairstyle. They plot ways to seem even more normal than their friends and co-workers. They don't dare fail to turn on their lawn sprinklers or dress appropriately for casual Fridays at the office. Anything that could drag them out of their routines is viewed as suspect at best. Love and lust are both diseases, possibly fatal, as are all the other passions that could drive one to do things that would result in expulsion from the flock. Keep them quarantined to secret affairs and teenage dates, to nightclubs and strip clubs, for God's sake. Don't contaminate the rest of us. Go wild when your football team wins a game. Drink yourself into oblivion when the weekend comes. Rent obscene movies if you have to. But don't you dare sing or run or make love out there. Under no circumstances admit to feeling anything that doesn't belong to the staff room or at the dinner party. Under no conditions admit to wanting anything more or different than what everyone else wants, whatever and whoever that might be. And of course, their children have learned this too. Even after the death matches of the grade school nightmare, even among the most rebellious and radical of the nonconformists, the same rules are in place. Don't confuse anybody as to where you stand. Don't use the wrong signifiers or subscribe to the wrong codes. Don't dance when you're supposed to be posing. Don't speak when you're supposed to be dancing. Don't mess with the genre or the moves. Make sure you have enough money to participate in the various rituals. To keep your identity intact, make it clear which subcultures and styles you're aligned to, which bands and fashions and politics you want to be associated with. You wouldn't dare risk your identity, would you? That's your character armor, your only protection against certain death at the hands of your friends. Without an identity, without borders to define the edges of yourself, you'd just dissolve into the void, wouldn't you? The generation gap. The older generations of the bourgeoisie have nothing to offer the younger ones because they have nothing in the first place. All their standards are hollow. All of their riches are consolation prizes. Not one of their values contains any reference to real joy or fulfillment. Their children sense this and rebel accordingly whenever they can get away with it. The ones that don't have already been beaten into terrified submission. So how has bourgeoisie society continued to perpetuate itself through so many generations? By absorbing this rebellion as part of the natural life cycle. Because every child rebels as soon as she is old enough to have a sense of self at all. This rebellion is presented as an integral part of adolescence, and thus the woman who wants to continue her rebellion into adulthood is made to feel that she is insisting on remaining a child forever. It's worth pointing out that a brief survey of other cultures and peoples reveal that this adolescence rebellion is not inevitable or natural. The perpetual rebellion of youth also creates deep gulfs between different generations of the bourgeoisie, which play a crucial role in maintaining the existence of the bourgeoisie as such, because the adults always seem to be the enforcers of the status quo, and the youth do not have the perspective to see that their rebellion has been also absorbed into that status quo. Generation after generation of young people are able to make the mistake of identifying older people themselves as a source of their misfortunes, rather than realizing that these misfortunes are the result of a larger system of misery. They grow older and become bourgeoisie adults themselves, unable to recognize that they are merely placing their former enemies, and still unable to bridge the so-called generation gap to learn from people of other age groups, let alone establish some kind of unified resistance with them. Thus, the different generations of the bourgeoisie, while seemingly fighting amongst themselves, work together harmoniously as components of the larger social machine to ensure maximum alienation for all. The myth of the mainstream. The bourgeoisie man depends upon the existence of a mythical mainstream to justify his way of life. He needs this mainstream because his social instincts are skewed in the same way his conception of democracy is. He thinks that whatever the majority is, wants, does, must be right. Nothing could be more terrifying to him than this new development, which he is beginning to sense today, that there no longer is a majority, if there ever was. Our society is so fragmented, so diverse, that at this point, it is absurd to speak of a mainstream. This is a myth partly created by the anonymity of our cities. Almost everyone passes on the street as is a stranger. One mentally regulates these anonymous figures to the faceless mass one calls the mainstream, to which one attributes whatever properties one thinks of strangers as possessing. For the smug salesman, they all envy him for being even more respectable than they are. For the insecure bohemian rebel, they must disapprove of him for not being like they are. They must be part of the silent majority, that invisible force that makes everything the way it is. One assumes that they are the same normal people seen in television commercials. But the fact is, of course, that those commercials refer to an unattainable ideal, in order to keep everyone feeling left out and insufficient. The mainstream is analogous to this ideal, as it keeps everyone in line without ever actually making an appearance, and possesses the same degree of reality as the perfect family in the toothpaste advertisement. No one worries more about this absent mass than the bohemian children of the bourgeoisie. They bicker over how to orchestrate their protests to gain mass appeal for their radical ideas, as if there is still a mass to appeal to. Their society is now made up of many communities, and the only question is which communities they should approach. And dressing nice, proper language and all, is probably not the best way to appeal to the most potentially revolutionary elements of their society. In the last analysis, the so-called mainstream audience, most of them, imagine they are dressing up for, at their demonstrations and political events, is probably just the specter of their bourgeoisie parents, engraved deep in their collective unconscious, collective psychosis, as a symbol of the adolescent insecurity and guilt they never got over. They would do better to cut their ties to the bourgeoisie entirely, by feeling free to act, look, and speak in whatever ways are pleasurable, no matter who is watching. Even when they are trying to advance some political cause, for no political objective reached by activists in camouflage would be more important than beginning the struggle towards a world in which people will not have to disguise themselves to be taken seriously. This is not to pardon those insecure bohemians who use their activism not as a means of building ties with others, but rather as a way to set themselves apart in their desperation to purchase an identity for themselves. They believe that they must pay for it by defining themselves against others. You can recognize them by their self-righteousness, their pompous show of ideological certainty, the ostentatious way they declare themselves activist at every opportunity. Political activism is almost exclusively their sphere. Today, an exclusive is the key word. Until this changes, the world will not.
You can see the very movements of their bodies, forced painfully into the narrow space of permitted masculinity, moving inside the invisible cage, how the supposed winners of the gender game suffer just as much as the others from their hollow victory. Constantly terrified of each other and everyone else, themselves most of all, they take their fear out on the rest of us, perpetuating the climate of fear and violence. But when the terrain of affection itself has been occupied, when every gesture has been appropriated by the language of coercion, how will we approach each other for support, for sanctuary, and for healing? Gender is another false division of life into arbitrary categories, none of which can adequately describe or contain any of us, in order to define us against each other in the interest of power. There is no male, there is no female. Get free, get off the map.
Each is for history, hygiene. I
here.
When I smoke trees, I elevate to a new state where I recreate my discombobulated memories. I sit and watch as the sun walks out the back door. I scream for more, more elevation, so I can prophesize about the ideals of the new nation. Don't y'all know? I'm Rasta from creation. Yo. Yo, 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 yo! I used to wear fat laces, and I was down with the Zulu Nation. I take a small bud, put it in my back pocket, and save it for a special occasion. I even be saying shit like, I understand the quadratic equation. Or, the equator circumference is my mind's consciousness times pi r squared. Then I'd be acting like I know what that means. I'd be eating jelly belly jelly beans when I smoke trees. When I smoke trees, I move to a higher state of consciousness. My spirit's lifted from the ground. My spirit moves to the speed of sound. Can y'all hear it? Souls transcending blacktop paradigms. Chi energy is organized. As we revise cubicled ways of thought, we grow. We fly, conquering new planets. Cosmic warriors armed with a vicious history, turning their mystery inside out. The sons and daughters of a historical legacy stand armed and ready, demanding a solution. Well, I be spitting words like circumlocution. I could have sworn I sat and watched the revolution. Well, it must have passed by. Cause all I'm doing is getting high.
Màgic, són fetes de cotó, d'un cotó blanc i trencat, blanques com el color de la teva pell, pell blanca de porcelana com la noia d'en Pau Riba, el blanc, un pèl groguenc dels teus ulls ametllats, braços que bressolen les teves circulars pupil·les, que són d'un blau clar, transparent, com l'aigua neta. En elles gargoteja un món d'impulsos automàtics. Les fulles del meu llibre imaginari, màgic, són espais rectangulars i com els camps cultivats, sovint hi pinto, escric, gargotejo, els hi deixo senyals, paraules i dibuixos, automàtics, pensats, analitzats. Damunt del color blanc de la paret del meu estudi hi esgrafio paraules il·legibles, les meves obres. L'hora màgica. La llum del capvespre, l'hora baixa. sembla sortida d'un barret de mag. Misteriosa i màgica, creadora de somnis. Quin gran artista és la llum a l'hora bruixa. Transforma els perfils dels paisatges i sovint els amaga, els canvia, els dibuixa de nou. I tot seguit els omple d'incontables percepcions. D'aquestes imatges en guardo en la infantesa una bona col·lecció. Si un dia les vols veure, hi anirem junts, contents. Això sí, lluny del poble i de la gent que no ho viu encuriosida, lluny d'aquells que miren i no hi veuen, allà on acaben les cases, les indústries, on s'alcen els boscos i les muntanyes. Sempre al capvespre, a l'hora baixa, a l'hora bruixa. Et parlaré sempre baix, per tal que els nostres vells secrets no siguin descoberts pels vents de llevant. Saps de sobres que sempre arriben molls, com els nostres sexes abans del coit. Hem marinat tempestuosos mars, hem superat moments i esculls difícils d'eludir, dia rere dia, any rere any, amb caràcter. Abraçats a l'única raó de viure junts, una immensa estima, pacientment edificada. La memòria de tantes coses compartides. Malgrat tot, sempre hi ha el perill de naufragar. Que tots els vents acompanyin el nostre futur. És igual que siguin secs, humits o tormentosos. Encara ens queden bé reptes, espais per edificar. La vida compartida no és fàcil, fa temps que ho sabem. Però plegats i amb il·lusions renovades, caminarem més lluny. Molt més lluny. M'he transformat en flor. Observo tots els pètals, estan ufanosos, plens de colors, i la tija forta i erecta. Mira'm els ulls, prenyats de llunes, d'estels de colors, de barques enfonsades. El temps en llença intermitentment alguns missatges optimistes, onades de llum sobre un demà cada dia més incert. Miro el futur amb relativa esperança. I com diu el poeta, canto amb veu alta que tot és possible i tot està per fer. Sóc un insignificant planeta, parcialment conegut dins d'un univers farcit d'estels i estranys forats negres. En el meu jardí només hi conviuen els somnis, els meus, i si tu vols també els teus, els de tots. I les aigües avancen tenyides de varis colors sobre el mantell de cotó que hi dorm un jove indigent. Les rates fan curses sobre la vorera vomitada i pixada d'un carrer del meu barri. A la matinada, les mànegues d'aigua netegen i esborren totes les vergonyes. Només se sent la fortor de l'orina. Les petjades d'un món desbocat. D'una societat que genera escorrialles. Mentrestant, les aigües avancen i el perill d'ofegar-nos amb merda creix constantment.
Avança,
Déjalo. Cierra tus ojos. Todos los cuentos llegan a un fin y no hay nada más que contar. Los que no pueden encontrar la venganza pueden a lo menos destruirse ellos mismos. Y nos encontraremos de nuevo en la inexistencia, porque el mundo que queremos no existe. Nos espera en la inexistencia. Falto de alas, nos sobrecargó. Hasta que no pudimos abrir nuestros ojos, pero como los buitres entierran, la muerte en el cielo. Sin corazones tan pesados podríamos volar. ¿Recuerdas cuando estuvimos enamorados? ¿Muriendo del deseo por un futuro imposible? El corazón en mi pecho, como un animal torturado. Los nervios en mi carne, eran velas romanas. Ahora ha terminado. Y debemos correr un maratón, sin saber lo que nos espera en el final. Por millas vacías corremos, bajo cielos vacíos corremos y corremos. Por años vacíos, la nieve se derrite, el madero se pudre, la piedra se erosiona. Pero los fantasmas de todos y todas quienes nunca han vivido no se destiñen. Como un ejército llorando y deplorando, como una amplia marea subiendo. Podemos encontrarnos en el horizonte, donde la tierra y el cielo chocan. Entonces, todavía estoy corriendo, sigo. Sigo solo y fatigado, y sigo. ¿Dónde están los demás? Y sigo. ¿Dónde nos encontraremos? Y sigo. Y nos encontraremos de nuevo.
We must run, we must run.
Pues bien, aquí seguimos. Esperemos que os haya gustado esta sesión de lírica ardiente y salvaje. Hemos escuchado las voces de Vittorio Reyes, reencarnado en el espíritu del Crazy Horse. También hemos escuchado a Gregor Sansa, a Gloria Cubana, a Jordi Aligué, acompañado de las guitarras de Arturo Blasco, y también a Luther Blissett. Ya estamos entrando en la recta final del programa y nos gustaría comentar algunas cosas de agenda, ya que pues pensamos que está bastante completa para el próximo fin de semana, y os empezaremos diciendo que hay varios eventos para el próximo fin de semana. Por ejemplo, se celebra el Tattoo Circus, este festival de tatuajes cuyos todos los beneficios son benéficos para los presos y las compañeras presas. Se va a celebrar el 16, 17 y 18 de abril en el centro social ocupado La Forsa, en Cornellà, en la Avenida de la Fama 41. También el sábado día 17 de abril, en el centro social ocupado La Fabriqueta, hay un concierto de apoyo a Radio Bronca con actuaciones de Absurdo, Glam, una nueva banda formada por gente de Uber, Derrota y Transición. El mismo día, el sábado 17, en el centro social ocupado La Papa, hay un concierto con Ali Akka, Mugrin y una banda por confirmar. El próximo sábado 24 de abril, en el Casal Jova de Roquetas, nos visita Radical Satán y Mr. Labrador, dos proyectos súper interesantes desde Francia, y estarán acompañados y acompañadas de Soy Su. También deciros que el día 21 de abril estará tocando el señor Henry Barnes de Bastard Noise o Manis de Bastard con su proyecto Ruidoso en Solitario, Ans for Christ. Creo que es la sala donde toca, se llama Miscelánea, pero bueno, a ver si podemos informar mejor y más la semana que viene. Y bien, a lo largo del programa, aparte de las voces, pues las bandas que han sonado han sido From the Deeps, hemos escuchado también a Dark Castle y hemos escuchado también a White Darkness, y nos vamos a despedir con un material que lo hemos recibido hoy mismo. Es un CDR titulado Abandone toda la esperanza quien entre aquí. Son los archivos del Sindicato de la Defensa, el primer volumen, unos archivos sonoros que recopilan unas cuantas bandas astures que se crecieron y empezaron a rular por ahí pues a principios del año 2000, y bueno, este CD recopilatorio recopila a las bandas de Attack of the Fiesta, Amstrad, Asturias Blaster y Applied Asturias. Como podéis ver por los nombres, están súper orgullosos y orgullosas de ser astures. No sé, hay unos títulos bastante interesantes, como bueno, la maqueta de Attack of the Fiesta se llama Ensidesa Warriors. Hay temas como La Autovía del Cantábrico, Gazpacho is Death, Constantinopla Rising. La verdad es que no tiene ningún desperdicio. Y bien, nos vamos a despedir escuchando a un proyecto que sale aquí, que se llama Amstrad, y bueno, nos vamos a despedir hasta la semana que viene, como siempre decimos, salud y fuck the bastards.
You're coming around with me. Estás escuchando Radio Bronca en el 104.5 de tu FM. Y ahora también a partir de las 12 de la noche en el 96.6.